College Promoters USA, founded and located in San Antonio, operates as the only family-owned college recruiting company in Texas that brings a truly professional, local, and face-to-face approach to area high school student athletes and their families. If your son or daughter is serious about college athletics, call them at 210-494-6363 or visit collegepromotersusa.com anytime. College Promoters USA, the best investment a parent can make in their high school student athletes.
Here we go. It's another edition of the 50-50 podcast powered by College Promoters USA. Our proud partners, College Promoters USA, they are America's premier college prep program and high school student athlete marketing service since 1997. Located here in San Antonio, Texas, you can find them locally in the Ventura Plaza Shopping Center. You can also find them via social media on Twitter at SATX Recruiting, as well as on Instagram at College Promoters USA, as well as on their website at collegepromotersusa.com. My next guest, big fan of his work. First chance we actually kind of get to kind of sort of meet, even though we've been talking for probably months and months, I think, over soccer Twitter, as we call it. And yeah. I know I had a while back, probably about a year ago, I think it was, I had the pleasure of following him up on John Johnson's grassroots coaching podcast. I think I followed you. I think you were the guest right before me. He is Coach Mike Carroll, the player development director for SG1 Soccer Club. Coach, how are you?
Great, man. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We're excited to have you. Always excited to be able to highlight coaches that are doing special things in their particular area and their communities, and especially around the state here in Texas. So definitely excited to have you here. You ready to jump in?
Ready. Let's go for it, man.
All right, let's go. All right, so before we kind of dive into a little bit the particulars of the particulars of what it is that you're kind of currently doing, what the lives you're changing and what have you, tell us a little bit, just briefly, a little bit about your background, but also more so how you kind of arrived to your current club there in SG1 Soccer Club.
I played my whole life up until the college ages, right? And the only problem I had in college was apparently you have to go to class. So they don't just let you show up. Yeah, they don't just let you show up and play. You kind of had. So I was playing at Southwest Missouri State University in Springfield, Missouri. And I was working at Bass Pro Shops while I was going to school there. And I was not good at the whole school portion of that. And so I ended up dropping out. And I 6 months later, I joined the Navy, which was a smart move on my part, by the way. In 1996, I was stationed in Bremerton, Washington, just outside Seattle. And I volunteered, I don't know, at the ripe old age of 21. I volunteered to coach at the YMCA there because I was going to be on land for a while for the first time. So and they gave me the little kids and 5 and 6 year olds. And I just kind of fell in love with it, and not nearly the coaching knowledge then that I have now at 47 years old. I just grew to love coaching, grew to love working with the younger kids. It's an age group I've enjoyed staying in, specializing in, and continuing to find a way to develop in that age group, both as a coach and develop the players. So I got into full-time coaching about a decade ago, doing it full-time. Up until that point, it was mostly volunteer at little recreational places like the YMCA, like what we call Funfair Positive Soccer here. I volunteered for them a little bit. Local recreational places that play soccer once a year. We'll call them sports organizations, where you might do a baseball, a football, a soccer kind of thing year round there. So, and then about a decade ago, I decided that I wanted to try to go full time into this. With my second kid coming, I decided that I was going to try to go full time into this so that I could have more free time during the day to be with my kids because I was working a lot at the time, and it just paid off. I've been doing it ever since, nonstop. I've been at SG1 for about a year now, right at about a year and a month. They brought me in to be the director of player development, basically establish the training methodology and coaching methodologies for U6 through U10, essentially.
Got it. So, excuse me, in that time, so you've been there for basically about 13 months or so. So clearly one of the things that was noticed, talk to us, in that year, there was a clear shift in the methodology and the culture. Talk to us a little bit as to the how, maybe, and the why, and what that looked like, I guess, 14 months ago versus now.
Sure. So SG1, when I got there, it was a good club. It was already a real community club, right? KD is not nearly as big as, you know, Houston or whatnot. It's a town, you know? Right. A lot of people know each other, right? It's a great place to live. And SG1 was already a part of the community when I got to it. And it was a good club that needed help organizing its younger age groups so that it could maximize itself down the road in the older age groups, right? So one of the things that I wanted to do was establish a true development methodology where all of the coaches were utilizing the same terminology, utilizing the same development plan and the same training sessions, and everybody on the same page, top to bottom, whether it was a U6 or a U18, right? I wanted the club and the coaches all to be on the same page, top to bottom. And that's what the club was looking for, as well, to take the next step for themselves. And, I looked at SG1, and when I saw them, I thought, wow, this is a club that has a lot of potential. And if we could get the right coaching staff in and educate the ones that were there, that I was fully supported by the management that was there already. So by the ownership and by the DOC and the technical director, I was going to be fully supported in whatever I needed to do. And to this day, I don't think they've told me no on anything. And that's great, you know, as long as I had a plan, you know, a way to execute it and, you know, it looked like it fit, right? They've, you know, a good reason for wanting to do something. They didn't have any problem with me at all. So the first thing we revamped, the first thing that got changed was what's called the Rising Stars program. There was only about, I want to say there was 21 or 22 players in the Rising Stars program. Now that's kind of like the rec program for the club. And it's mostly 5 and 6 year olds. There was no development plan, development strategy for those players. It's not that they weren't, it wasn't an effort issue. It was a knowledge issue on how to work with kids that young. Right. Right. We developed, I put in place a system for that development for those youngest kids. And we decided to make it a little bit bigger. There were 62 kids in it last season now. So it grew quite a bit. And 24 of those players moved from the Rising Stars program, our development program, into our club now this upcoming season. So it was wildly successful at developing the kids. And the primary purpose of that is to help the kids develop technically. It's almost all completely education for the parents, kind of like a Tom Beyer soccer starts at home education for the parents, right? and Korver technical ball mastery. So the ball mastery, the helping develop a player's comfort on the ball, those are the two primary things that parents and players work on when they come to that program. And then we reestablished the I don't want to call it competitive, we call it the pre-academy side, right?
Right.
So it's the so we have like three different levels that like 8-year-olds and 7-year-olds can play at now. And what I really wanted for our club was to be pretty inclusive and to have a spot for every kid at those ages, right? I mean, nobody should be turning away 7- and 8-year-olds. It's
correct.
Yeah, I mean, there's no such thing as a 7-year-old that's too far gone, right? It's not like, oh, you should have started 3 years ago. It's too late for you now.
Yeah, no, yeah, they're washed up. They're washed up. They're done. Right?
Yeah, that doesn't exist. So I wanted it to be extremely inclusive and for us to have a place for everybody to develop, regardless of, you know, whether the player has been playing for half his or her life, or whether the player figured out the ball was round yesterday, doesn't really matter. I wanted to have a spot for everybody in the whole club. So.
Got it. So, you know, you hit on a lot of things there from the player-centered perspective and the coaches working together. Sounds like obviously the buy-in was pretty immediate. When did you start to see, because the and, you know, when you're working with this group of, you know, young student athletes, it takes a while to really, it takes a lot of patience, it takes a long while to see kind of the fruits of your labor. But when did you maybe start getting the first inkling or maybe feedback from your coaches that some of the initial steps of what you were implementing was starting to work?
Well, I was very hands-on with the whole thing, right? I mean, even I'm coaching three of the teams myself. So I was very hands-on with all of it. The buy-in was pretty quick from the club. I had already had a bit of a reputation for doing a decent job in these age groups, right? When I joined the club. So that gave me a little bit of a leash, some room to work with, partly. And then the club gets all the credit for helping implement everything as fast as possible, right? And then the coaches coming in, some coaches came in that I had already known that had worked with me in previous places, right? So I knew that those coaches were already going to be bought in because they had been in the same situation at other places. So some coaches came over that I already knew could handle it. And the expectation was already there. And I knew that they could execute what was being asked. And so that, in a sense, made it quicker and easier. It wasn't necessarily... I didn't have to retrain a bunch of coaches because essentially four moved over within a month after I did. We brought in four coaches that were able to jump right in and help. Four amazing coaches. We have fantastic coaches at this level, and that's a super important thing. It is super important that you have experienced coaches that understand not only the methodology, but how to communicate it and how to educate it, right? So that's why I'm never an advocate for putting Joe beginner coach at the U6 level and then asking that coach to, you know, revamp or make changes. Because to be honest with you, it's not a beginner's job. Although one of the biggest mistakes clubs make is putting the least experienced coaches in charge of the least experienced players, right?
Right.
And you end up with problems when you do that. You need to have highly experienced coaches running the least experienced age groups. And you'll really start to see things turn around if you take highly experienced coaches and put them at the lower age groups or lower skill levels. You'll see your development start to raise quickly. So, and with all of the coaches being there and not looking at this as some part-time job or some way to earn a paycheck or whatever, they're serious and they're focused about developing these players, you end up with a lot of good things happening. Right. And I've been fortunate to, you know, have this staff, and they're all doing some fantastic work. So the coaches are amazing.
So it sounded like it was a pretty seamless transition from the coach's perspective in terms of the methodology and the terminology, right? So, but now on the player side and on maybe even the parent side, right? As far as being able to facilitate that buy-in.
Yeah.
You mentioned the methodology being cognitive based and the terminology being simple and universal.
Yeah.
How did you with your coaching staff, how did you all roll that out with both with the players and as well as with parents?
So with the coaching staff, it took a couple of meetings and courses and classes and kinds of things, you know. A lot of them took the TOVO 7v7 course online to help so that they could understand, okay, this is what we're doing, right? And then we could, you know, continue to educate through over time. But also a lot of the coaches, we ended up, we're at the point now to where 7 coaches that have worked with me in the past are now working with me here. So that made things a heck of a lot easier, right? It makes it seem seamless. Makes the transition seem seamless whenever you bring over coaches and they already know what's going on. They already know the terminology. They already know the methodology. So that helps, you know, when you have 7 coaches come in and they can help the coaches that were there before, that helps a lot. The hardest buy-in was from the parents, right? Because one of the things that I initially did was we took players that were playing in a competitive environment against other clubs around the city, and I brought them all back in-house. And that was when parents first started looking at me like I had 3 heads.
Yeah, they thought they got relegated, didn't they?
You could tell in their eyes it could look like a relegation, right? And I'm like, and after me spending some time with the players, I was like, no, this is what we need to do, because they're not ready to compete. I'd been coaching at a high level for quite a while, and I had a pretty decent idea, and me and my coaches as well. I'd been coaching for the coaches that came to the club as well, had been coaching at a high level for a while. And so we already had a pretty good idea of what that looked like. And we knew that this was not the time, this was not the group to try to compete, right? So we felt it better to pull our youngest players back in-house and develop them there, help them learn the terminology to where there wasn't be any pressure to score goals, win games or anything, and we could balance out the teams on the field and keep things close and fun and interesting. Kids don't really care who they play against. They don't care if the players on the other side of the field are wearing red, blue, white, yellow, or anything like that. 6-year-olds just don't care, right? Parents tend to care, but 6-year-olds couldn't care less. And so it allowed us to bring them out of that highly intense environment where parents are screaming at you from one side and coaches are screaming at you from another side. And there's a referee in the middle calling all these, you know, and so I wanted to pull them out of that because that's not a good development environment for kids. especially at that age, right? It's just not. So when we pulled them back in-house, that was probably the hardest thing to take for a lot of parents to realize, okay, this is where our players are really at. But a year later, it really, really paid off. And so now SG1 is doing extremely good. We've got top bracket teams at all levels. And so it just took a little time. Now, I mean, we're not winning the top bracket or anything like that. You know, I think we finished mid-table with a lot of our teams, but I'm perfectly okay with all of that. I'm not here to win games or anything. My job is to develop players. And what I'm asking the players to do is hard, right? It goes against what we're all asking the players to do is, it goes against their natural instinct, being patient with a ball, pulling it back, relaxing, playing slow, not driving right at a goal. All of that goes against their natural instinct at those ages. And so it takes a little while to deprogram and reprogram that and give them a different view of the game, right? So if you asked the kids, you know, before, they would tell you, you know, before we got there, and say, hey, what's the objective of the game today? They probably would have said, go out and score a bunch of goals and win, right? And today, if you ask those same players, what's the objective of today's game? They'll tell you it's to get better, right? Today, here's what we're working on in today's game. Here's what we're going to try to get better at today. And it never has anything to do with scoring goals in any of our games. And so winning is not, nobody cares if you win at U8 or U9, right? Nobody, it doesn't really matter. The only people I've had any problem with on it is the parents from time to time. But that's all a different thing. But it's
right.
Yeah. But the kids don't care. They're as long as you can make the education part of the sport fun and enjoyable and help them see that, hey, are you better today than we were 6 months ago? What did you guys look like a year ago? And what do you think you look like today? Kids are cognitive enough. They're smart enough to see through that. They can see it. If you ask them that, they'll tell you, oh no, I'm much better today than I was 3 months ago. Good. There you go. Yeah. You know, and that makes them feel happy.
Yeah. It's important feedback for sure. Yep. So coach, you guys are, excuse me. So you guys are located there in Katy. So I guess you can call it the greater or the extended greater Houston area, which is a gigantic area. Nice. Give us a little bit of a club, you know, club spotlight in terms of numbers, particularly in your area, total numbers. I know you guys are expanding quickly.
Yeah.
Just give us a kind of a club spotlight. What numbers wise, what is that looking like?
So yeah, we're located in Katy. For those who need to know, it's 99 and I-10. Way out west. We have about 600, I want to say, kids in the club, probably in that neighborhood. I haven't gotten an exact count, but I'd say there's about 600 players or so in the club. And that, you know, if you're in, you know, central small town Indiana, that's probably a massive club. But here in Houston, there's multiple clubs with 3,000, 5,000, and as many as 10 and 11,000 players, right? In the club. So a 600 player club is not big. We are the largest club in Katy. But as far as it goes from the greater Houston area, we're not even on the radar.
Right.
We have added in the last year, probably 150 to 200 kids. A good portion of that is part of when you add good coaches, good players want to play for the club. That's a part of it, right? And we have an incredible coaching staff. The other part of it is when you go out and you play a certain way and look a certain way when you play, right? And you look like you understand the game, then that attracts players as well. The way we play is kind of our advertisement. We're not out here advertising all over the city or anything like that. Right. So the way we play and what we're trying to do attracts people as well. It's a great culture in our club, from our mentor program where our high school kids help out with our younger kids as kind of, I want to call them assistant coaches. We have our high school players, or some of them act as assistant coaches for the U7s, U8s, U9s, right?
Oh, nice.
And yeah, and they help out yeah. with in that regard. We're involved with a lot of the local schools, helping support what's going on at local schools and some churches. And so we want to stay as much as we can, a community club, a local community club, right? As a matter of fact, to the point to where if we expanded, I don't think we would add more where we're at. We would add to another community and probably try to make that branch of our club that a community club in its new community. So I think it's super important that a club be part of the community that surrounds it,
right.
Be involved in the community, working yeah. with local businesses and local schools and churches and things like that. It's super important that you have a positive environment for the coaches. You've got to have great leadership. The coaches need to understand that they're highly respected and that they are highly valued, because good coaches are really, really hard to find.
Amen.
So retaining coaches is important. You can't have coaches cycling through year after year after year. That's a leadership problem. If you're at a club that has that going on, that's a leadership problem. Yeah. I want our coaches to stay for 20 years, right? I want them to stay a long time, and I want them to feel like they're at a home, and I want the players to feel like they're at a home. So, I really think that the club, does a good job of making our place feel like a home. I know that they've made it feel like a home for me. The owner, the DOC, all of the admin people, right? They've done a great job of making me feel at home over the first year that I've been here.
Yeah. Yeah. And you talk about in terms of numbers, yeah, maybe it doesn't quite put you all on the radar in terms of big club numbers there in Houston, but I think part of what's facilitating that rapid growth for you all is that community club focus, right? The development at home piece. You kind of referenced Tom Beyer there a little bit in terms of soccer starts at home, but also it's not what I've come to realize, particularly on the club side, is it's not so much about your total numbers as it is of what makes you different, right? What makes you unique? What, you know, because otherwise it's like, hey, I just throw a dart at the board, and it's like, hey, well, let's just go to this club because they're all the same, right? They're all cookie cutter. So right. I think from that perspective, I think that's what's also kind of why, as I've been following you all, been following SG1, that's one of the things that I'm picking up on. And I've heard a lot of good things as well.
I would say one of the things that makes us different is that we don't underrate what young kids are capable of learning, right? Young players are more than capable of absorbing the cognitive aspects of the game, the understanding of space and time, the decision-making aspects of the game. They're more than capable of understanding all of it. They absorb everything very quick. And it's like when you say, what's the best time to learn a second language? It's when you're little, right? it's the same thing. These kids, they're the way that their brains are firing, right? It's easier for them to learn this stuff, believe it or not, at age 6, 7, and 8. The only thing that has kept players in the past from being able to absorb all of this is the fact that I don't think coaches had the ability to teach it, right? Mm-hmm. In a manner that could be absorbed by a kid. It's up to us to link the dots for them, but they can get to it. We just have to find a way to link those dots. And I would say that kids are, or if you hear like, oh, they shouldn't be doing this, they're 6 years old, they shouldn't be doing that, they're 7 years old, they shouldn't be doing this until they're 9 or 10 or 11 or whatever, right? That's something that kids have to overcome from us adults. Right? I have a 7-year-old and I have a 15-year-old, and I don't want them held back by our adults' preconceived notions of what they are capable of learning. With me, I throw it at the kids and see if it sticks, you know, and then I just keep going, right? And then I go to the next thing. And then when they get that, I go to the next thing. And it's incredible how fast and how far you can move 6, 7, and 8-year-olds. And I just keep going until they start looking at me like this. And then I go, okay, I hit something that now, all right. Take one step back. Yeah. And then we'll do a little board work with it. I'll ask them some questions. We'll see if I can get them there in shorter increments. And then when we've mastered that, we move on to the next thing. So I don't stop just because they're 7 or just because they're 6. I keep going on to whatever the next logical thing is to move on to based on our methodology, our training methodology.
Yeah. I have a seven and a 14-year-old. So I'm right with you, man. I'm right with you. I fully agree. That's great stuff. Great stuff. So now you're 1 year in.
Mm-hmm.
Now as you start to, obviously it's continued player development, that goes without saying, but when you get into the minutia, right, into the details, into the weeds of, okay, how do we start measuring more player specific, team specific success in terms of their development for year two? What are maybe some things you all have on the agenda in terms of how do we measure more, a little bit more specific success for year two?
Right. So we're just now starting to get the lower age groups of the club more organized, right? It's not something that happens in 3 months or 6 months, right? It takes time. We're way ahead of the schedule that I thought we were going to be at. I mean, we're way ahead. And so I'm ecstatic with where we're at. So we'll finish continuing to get organized, right? And then from there, it's really just continuing to push our individual player development, push our team development or organization and stuff. So continuing to get parents to buy into what we do, why we do it, how we do it, the method, you know, the method behind the madness, you know, and so it's more along the lines of continuing to get people to buy in to what we're doing. What makes it hard, right, is that there's clubs out there that preach the exact opposite, right? Or there's clubs out there that have very, very good salesmen, right? And so it's one of those, you know, is the grass greener on the other side? Are we missing out because we don't have a certain logo or because we're not at a certain big club or anything like that, right? That's kind of a fight that we have. There's a big club that's not too far from us, and they've got the logo, they've got the salesman, they've got the look, right? They've got the training facilities that are super huge and super pretty, right? And it's when you go and you walk into a, you know, a place that, you know, they've got all turf and they've got all this, it's really, really pretty and everything. You look at it as a parent, and I could see it with my 7-year-old. If I walked in there with my 7-year-old, I could see it and go, wow, this looks like a great place for my kid to train. Right. And it's not that, I mean, we have a lovely train, we have a wonderful training facility, but things that we're going up against, right, are people preaching that they have this pathway to here and all of this other stuff, right? And they don't. But it's something that we have to work against. And we just have to be so good at what we're doing, right? And that's it. I just have to be so good that it's blatantly obvious, that it's a blatantly obvious choice. So player retention, after we've really developed some good players, that's hard, because they see these nice, pretty shiny things thinking that that's the next step. And I don't know how much sense I'm making, to be honest with you, but because I'm trying not to call anybody out. But people, when you develop high, really, really good players,
right,
other people start to want your players.
Right.
Right. And so retaining those players is the hard part. And they get pitched all of this that you should come over here. Here's what we're working on. And here's our pathway. And, you know, you'll get more eyes on you over here. And, you know, we have the, you know, we've got the MLS Next. We've got the ECNL. We've got all of these other things. Right. And we're having to fight against those kinds of things, and that makes it hard. When in reality, our coaching staff is, I don't want to say necessarily superior to a lot of other coaching staffs around, but if I was a gambling man, I'd put money on my staff, our staff.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, we got some input here saying that encouraging you to do it, coach, to call people out, I guess.
So. Yeah, no, I'm not going to call him out. Thanks, Jerry. No, I know who he is.
Nah, yeah, no, I figured. I understand that. I respect that, coach. And excuse me, but yeah, I mean, unfortunately, that's the harsh truth, right? And all you can do is continue to put your head down and, you know, and go to work. And because the truth of it is, too, is you hit on a point, is that word travels fast, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes it just takes a little longer to get back, maybe, even though it travels fast, and or people just don't want to hear it. But if you're doing things for the right reasons and you're doing them the right way, and you become known for, hey, again, what makes you different?
Sure. Yeah,
that doesn't mean that you're going to be immune to other clubs wanting to swoop in, right? That's always going to be the case. And sometimes, unfortunately, that has nothing to do with the kid, right? That's sometimes kind of enabled it might be by the parents.
You guys have that in San Antonio too, right? I mean, you have the FC Dallas of the world and stuff like that.
I mean, it's everywhere. It's everywhere. Unless you're in the very, very extremely rural areas of certain parts of the country. I've seen it every market I've been to, I've trained in. I've always seen it. I don't think you can escape that. But I think it's more of a continued, just like you said, right? As long as who you are, what you're about, and then if you're surrounding yourself with great people, such as putting your money on your staff, right? Betting on your staff. I think that's a continued focus. But if we have enough of those clubs, enough of those directors that are of that mindset, I think it can eventually make a dent in this system that everybody seems to have an opinion about or complain about, but then, you know, when it involves maybe their kid or when it involves their job, all of a sudden it's a different story, you know? So
I'll tell you, there's probably three or four other clubs in the Houston area that are in the same fight we are, right? I mean, we're not the only ones. There's some really, really good clubs out here trying to do the right thing in different parts of the city, and it's a hard fight. So you know, they're working hard, they're trying to do the right thing, trying to build the same way we are, using similar methodologies. You always get around back to the same stuff, but it's hard because you're not asking kids to play a certain way, you're not winning everything, right? It's hard when an opposing team can just stick a kid with a big leg in the back and a fast kid up front, and they put the ball over the top, right? And what you're asking your kids to do is play out of the back, and you're going to make mistakes trying to do that as a club, right? You're going to make mistakes. You're going to turn the ball over. You're going to give away easy goals to opponents, and you're going to lose some games, but you have to be patient and you have to see it through. And so for some parents, that patience is hard. Some parents put a value on medals and wins and losses and things like that, right? Most have been amazing for us. Most have put their faith and their trust, and they've seen the growth over the last year in their own individual player. I've been really, really happy with it. So every now and then you get one that says, no, we didn't win enough or whatever, so we're going to go join over here. And I tell them I'm not for everybody. There's no doubt about that. If that is your goal for your player, right? Then I'm not for you, and this club probably isn't necessarily for you. So I'm not scared to say that we're not for everybody. If you're looking for an education, soccer education, where your young player will be educated the right way, whatever that means, right? I mean, I know there's more than one way to do it. I hate to say the right way, but we'll be cared about. And will be looked after both technically and cognitively, right? Then we're probably the club for you.
Yeah.
Right. If you want to scream instructions from the sideline and tell your player where to go, when to go, how to go, and all those other things, we're probably not the club for you.
Right. And I'm glad to hear you say that, because one of the things that I've continued to, now it's been a little while since I've been directly affiliated with a club, but one of the things I continue to realize, I continue to notice from clubs across the country, really is we all know it in terms of directors, but there just continues to be this lack of emphasis on the actual implementation of a education system on what a club is about with parents. So, yeah. And what I mean by that is, unless in many cases, now, of course, as more parents continue to obviously get older, or as we develop more as a soccer country, I should say, and more parents have also played the game, it will kind of straighten itself out, if you will. But one of the things that I've noticed is with a lot of parents that maybe they didn't play the sport at all, not just don't really know much about the sport, the only real surefire way when they're first stepping into it as a novice parent, the only real surefire way they know how to measure success is through wins and losses, right? Is through direct success, meaning via goals, probably. Sure. For their, for Jimmy or for little Susie, right? So, yeah. So the emphasis on that, I think, needs to continue to grow. Easier said than done, I know. But some of these clubs, I think, when you're talking about director of various coaching academies, junior academy, the select level, competitive travel, what have you, ECNL, but there never seems. I don't see any particular roles of a coach that is a parent liaison, a parent development coordinator, if you will.
Right.
Because I think if a little bit more of a focus was placed on that, even though everyone knows it's needed, but more of an emphasis was placed on that, I think the retention piece might kind of straighten itself out, I guess, a little bit at least.
Yeah, it would definitely make it harder for other clubs to steal players. I mean, you should be able to look at a team in a game, tournament, whatever, and be able to tell how that entire club, what their methods are, right? I mean, you should be able to see it in the product that they put on the field. So if you're seeing your right defender lob balls over the top constantly and your super fast striker chase after him hoping to score a goal, you know, then you've got everybody in between not getting any touches and not getting any better. So it doesn't take a lot of cognitive abilities to chunk a ball over the top and run after it. And that's, you know, once again, it just depends on what you, as a parent, what a parent values, right? So, but I think we're headed in that right direction in this country. There's a lot going right. I mean, a lot of people talk about what's wrong on soccer social media, but there's a lot going right too. We're probably better than we've ever been, coast to coast for sure. Our youth development is better than it's ever been. So I'm happy with our current station. I think you can be happy without being satisfied. There's still a lot more to do, but absolutely. I'm happy that we've come as far as we have. And I'm excited to see where we can go.
Right. So that's a great segue, Coach, as we start wrapping up here, our first segment. Obviously you're growing, and my understanding is you're also hiring, in terms of that growth, because as the numbers continue to grow, because of the work that you've done, the great work, the success you all have had in year one, tell us a little bit about that, if you don't mind. And also maybe what's the next step? What's on the agenda? What has you excited for SG1 soccer in the spring?
Well, there's a lot of really good things going on over here. So we're looking for coaches at a couple of different levels, primarily in the youngest levels. We've grown the most at U6, U7, U8, in that pre-academy level. We now have 14 teams at U9 and younger, and that's a lot. Yeah, that's a lot. That's the core of our club, probably the biggest that's the foundation of the club, essentially. And so on both the boys and the girls side. And so we need one or two coaches there, because we try to keep the coach to player ratio nice and comfortable. Also, we don't, like, I'm having to coach three or four teams at a time, right? And when I have to coach that many teams, not at a time, but like, right, I might have, you know, two practices on a Monday, two on a Tuesday stacked and stuff. So it takes
I could only imagine what the weekends are like. That's got to be fun too.
Yeah, it is. It's busy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But I mean, that's one of the reasons why you want the playing style, the terminology, and all those things to be constant among the entire club, right? So if I have to cover for the coach of the 2012s, then the terminology is the same, right? And so that way, if I go out there and I start using our terminology, they know what the players know what I'm talking about. So
right,
I already know what formation they're going to play. I already know what they already know what the terminology is and all of those other things. So, and if somebody has to cover for me, maybe I'm sick or I get hit by a bus or something, right? And they got to cover for me. Yeah. And somebody can step in and cover for me and know that it's just what the formation is, what the terminology is, and all of these other things. It makes covering for one another easy as well. So yeah, we're looking for a couple of coaches. Experience with younger age groups helps. It's way different than coaching, say, high school age kids. Coaching 7-year-olds is way different and takes a completely different skill set. And so we're looking for somebody. Honestly, I would take somebody with no experience but has elementary school teaching experience, right? And because they know how to communicate with a younger kid, a little kids and things like that. So there's just a patience level that it takes. And an understanding of, you know, you got to get every kid at least half a game, if not more, right? You got to get every kid. We're not just focused on the top five kids. We want everybody to get better all of those things. Whereas a high school age coach will might play the same players, right, for 70 minutes and then bring in some subs for the final 20 or something like that, right? You can't do that with six-year-olds. Everybody's got to get a ton of minutes. So, the coaches that we're looking for need to have that patience and that experience with younger kids. The future looks really, really good. We've got we're now in the ECNL Regional League for a lot of our older kids, and so that's headed in the right direction as far as pathways and where all of this can go. We are a partner in development now with the Houston Dynamo Academy, and which means they're paying attention to what we're doing, and they're doing some really good stuff over there. And we're working together hand in hand. Some of our coaches are working with their coaches hand in hand to kind of hopefully, you know, just to give our kids a broader pathway, right? To say that, hey, you know, you don't have to go here to get noticed. The Dynamo Academy is doing a good job of starting to embrace younger, smaller clubs. And we're one of the clubs that they've embraced. So there's a lot going on here. And the future is really, really bright with SG1. It's crazy how far we've come in the last year. Still a bit of a whirlwind.
Right. No, well, you're doing great stuff. It got my attention for sure. And that's kind of part of the reason why we wanted to have you on here today, Coach. Really appreciate that. Doing some great things. There's any way, you know, the 50-50 podcast can help facilitate that going forward into the future, please let us know for sure. So
for sure.
I understand you're going to stick around with us for our next segment, Coach. We get to pick on you a little bit here with Counterattack, have some fun with you. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Got it.
College Promoters USA. Founded and located in San Antonio, operates as the only family-owned college recruiting company in Texas that brings a truly professional, local, and face-to-face approach to area high school student-athletes and their families. If your son or daughter is serious about college athletics, call them at 210-494-6363 or visit collegepromotersusa.com anytime. College Promoters USA. The best investment a parent can make in their high school student athletes.
All right, and we're back with Player Development Director for SG1 Soccer Club, Mike Carroll. All right, Coach, you ready for some counterattack here?
Bring it.
All right, let's get after it. All right, first one. Any training session as a coach, not as a player, any training session or game day superstitions or rituals?
I know it's called rapid fire. Not really. Get a good night's sleep the night before. I'm as nervous as the kids are, probably more nervous before every game. Honestly, no. I don't have any. That's crazy, right? Because everybody has.
Right. Hey, maybe it's just something as simple as a good night's sleep. I wish I knew what that was. You'll have to tell me sometime what that is. But all right, next one. This one is a tribute to John Johnson. Are you a dog, cat, or tiger person? Which one?
Dog person. I got a miniature pincher. He's 15 years old. He's blind in his left eye and can't see out of his right one, but I love him to death. He's awesome. I'm a dog guy.
Yeah. You and I both. I know. John wanted me to ask that. He said anytime you interview a coach from Texas, you got to ask him if they're a tiger person, right? So. Shout out to John Johnson. All right, emojis or GIFs? Which one are you?
GIFs.
GIFs? What's the go-to GIF, the one you find yourself using the most?
The sunglasses one where he puts the sunglasses on, you know, from like the Breakfast Club.
Oh, nice. Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. All right. There you go. All right. Something you wish you would have been told prior to entering coaching?
Two things: how much you're going to fall in love with it, right? And is one. It's almost like an addiction, right? If you love the sport and you're passionate about sport, it becomes an addiction. like my caffeine, and then right. And then how difficult it's gonna be. It's like playing golf for me. I like golf, right? And so I'm passionate about it, and it can be just as frustrating, right? At times. So right. The problem solving of how do I get players from here to here, right? It yeah. keeps me up at night sometimes. And yeah. so I literally sit here with a pen and a pad trying to figure out, okay, how do I get them from here to here? And so it's like you truly care about it, right? And you're passionate about it. And so you're trying so hard to get it right. And right. and it's frustrating at times when I can't make the connection for the kids.
Yeah, I call it, aside from, you know, my wife, kids, my family, obviously, I call it my other love. I call it my mistress, you know? Yeah. So, you know, coaching this game, it can be cruel, and it does enough to keep you coming back. So
sure. yeah,
definitely know where you're coming from on that. All right. Next one. You can only shop at one for the rest of your life, Bucky's or HEB, which one?
Probably HEB.
Yeah, it's tougher than you think, right? It's tough.
It is. No, that's that's a tough question. Gotta love your beaver nuggets, but it's HEB.
Yeah. All right. That's another one that was kind of a tribute to John Johnson. So
sure. Sounds all like right.
I think that's three mentions. Need to get some royalty.
Yeah, royalty check.
Right. Exactly. All right. Favorite movie quote that you can share.
Favorite movie quote. Well, I gave this one to John the other day, as a matter of fact. There's this fourth mention, right?
Yeah.
So in one of my favorite movies, I was actually a four-sport athlete growing up. I played baseball. Baseball is one of my other loves, American football, soccer, and I also ran track. And so I'm a big baseball fan, and so I watch a lot of baseball movies, right? And one of my favorite movies is Moneyball, right?
Yes.
And so this pertains to, you know, what we're trying to do. And I shared the quote with him that anytime you're trying to change something, yeah. right? Anytime you're trying to make a change, right? The first guy through the wall always yeah. gets bloody, right? Always. And it's because the people who have their hands on the switch they panic, right? And they go crazy. And so, you know, we're trying to make a change in the way players are developed in this country. And there's times when you're going to get bloody, right? Making those changes, and you're going to have to make hard decisions, and there's going to be sacrifices, and there's going to be people that come at you, and you have to be okay with that.
Yeah.
And so it's just one of those things where, you know, the first guy through the walls getting bloody, but I'm okay with that. I'm okay with getting bloody.
Yeah. 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 It's a great quote. Great quote. Great movie. And, excuse me. Yeah. You know, I am kind of curious. I know some of it is obviously it's the Hollywood dramatization. I am curious if John Henry actually dropped that on Billy Beane, you know, that would be really good to know.
I don't know, but I hope he did. That would be fantastic. But yeah, there's I know that there were a lot of creative liberties taken in that movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jimmy Rodriguez dropping one on us, adapt or die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's also from Moneyball.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Next one we offer you. So this one, if you think that one was deep, this one's going to get deeper on you. Uh-oh. So you are made the soccer czar in America today. One thing you change in anything, absolutely anything at any level. One thing you'd change in soccer in America tomorrow. First agenda item.
Oh, that's easy. it's not deep at all. That's easy. It's payments for player development. I'm going blank here.
Oh, the Yeah, I know. I know exactly what you're talking about too. It escapes me right now.
Yeah, solidarity payments are instantly, no matter the club, right? So that in itself would lower the cost of club soccer, right? Because now, and it would change completely the way soccer is coached in the United States. Now coaches and clubs would be trying to actually develop players.
Yeah, they'd be rewarded
rather than winning teams. Because if I can develop a player, right? And, you know, Bayern Munich comes to me and says, hey, you've got this 17-year-old we like. You know, we'll give you $4 million for him or $3 million for this player, right? You know, that completely changes the way soccer is coached. It changes the landscape. But there would be solidarity payments in the United States tomorrow if I could make one change. It wouldn't be pro rel. I know a lot of people are on the pro rel. I don't know that the United States is ready for that. Although I'm all for it, I prefer it. But if the United States is ready for it, is a whole nother thing. Solidarity payments could happen tomorrow. It's just a decision.
Right. Now getting into it as to getting into the weeds as to what exactly it is, because I think that's part of the issue is a ton of fans and supporters in this country have no idea what it is, but that's a whole other can of worms. That's a whole other show, you know? And as to why they don't exist in this country. Yeah. That's a whole other. Yeah, for sure. So maybe that might bring you back for that one. So sure. But that's a great one. Nobody's ever mentioned that one. Solidarity.
Yeah. Solidarity payments would be the first thing. Cause that would change the landscape of the way soccer is coached right there. If you wanted to change the way soccer is coached to make sure it was 100% about player development, that would be it right there.
Yeah, you've now incentivized what I don't know, what would you say 95% of clubs in America say they're doing, right?
Yeah.
Right.
I would say it's probably pretty close,
Yeah. So going back to the movies here, who would play you in a movie? Can't say the Tiger King guy either, okay?
No.
That's too easy. That's way too easy.
I don't know what bearded men are out there. I mean, could Edward Norton grow a beard? If Edward Norton grew a beard, I would have him, you know.
He did Fight Club and then the other controversial one, American History X, like back to back. So that guy could do just about anything. So
yeah,
good actor. Yeah. Good actor.
Yeah.
Edward Norton, huh?
Edward Norton. I like that.
All right. Yeah. Good actor. Good actor. All right. What was your last vacation and what is a bucket list destination?
Last true vacation we took to Montana. Drove through Yellowstone National Park, spent 2 days at Yellowstone National Park. We drove to Montana, 6 miles from the Canadian border. My wife's family's Canadian. So we drove up into Montana, stayed there for a week, but loved all of the stops in between with the family. Bucket list destination. I want to go back to Australia one day. I was in Perth and Tasmania in 1996, early in 96, and I really had a good time there. But I'd love to go back to Australia and see Sydney. Yeah. I've never seen Sydney, so I would say that's probably a bucket list area. Sometime before I kick the bucket, that's where I want to go.
Yeah, a lot of you Navy guys say that. I don't love Australia for some reason. That comes up a lot with the Navy guys.
Yeah. Off camera, I'll talk to you about it.
Yeah, all right, for sure. All right. So you referenced this briefly just a few minutes ago.
Sure.
If not soccer, you would have coached what sport?
Yeah, it's baseball. Yeah, if it wasn't for soccer, I'm almost equally adept at baseball as well. It's a sport I'm passionate about. Love to follow the Astros here, and I'm a big Texas Ranger fan. I grew up in the DFW area, so baseball probably would have been the sport that I coached next if I wasn't.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. If you had to be transformed into one animal, what would it be?
I'm
gonna stump you on this one.
Yeah, no. Do I go with survival and common sense at the top of the food chain, or do I? You don't really want stuff chasing you, right? Nobody eats a whale. But
that's true.
I mean, probably like a big cat, a cheetah or something like that.
You just don't want to say tiger, do you?
I do not want to say tiger.
I knew it. I knew you were thinking it. Yeah. All right. Next one. Morning or night person?
Night person.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I get that question. I've gotten that question a lot, and I am not I'm an early riser, but not a morning person, if that makes any sense.
No, I'm the same way. My wife gets up at like 4:45 in the morning because she's got like a real job. So she's got like a desk and a computer and everything. She gets up to drive into work, you know, and in Houston, I mean, Houston's an hour away from Houston. So she drives an hour and some change into work. And so she's up early and out early, but, I'm almost forced awake. I also have to take the kids to school. So,
yeah. Gotcha. Okay. Last one. I ask everybody this, you know, we're quote unquote back to our normal, right? Pandemic is completely over. You've got everybody coming over. You're cooking Sunday dinner. You're the chef. What are you cooking?
Brisket. We're making brisket. Yeah.
Yeah.
Brisket.
I think that's back-to-back briskets. Both you and my last episode, Coach Atkins, I think he said the same thing.
Yeah, well, you can't go wrong with a brisket and some potatoes and some carrots. I mean,
no, you cannot. No. All right. Good. Well, hey, Coach, this was awesome. This was great. Loved having you on. Love your energy. You. Again, a big fan of what you're doing out in Katy. Before we kind of wrap up here, any final thoughts? Anything you want to share? Shout outs? Anything?
Shout out to our coaches. They're amazing. They're the ones that implement the plans, and you know, they've been absolutely fantastic. The methodology is nothing without a coach that can execute it, right? So, you know, I'm very, very proud of our club and what it's been. Super shout out to our director of coaching, Adam Girdlestone, and our the owner of the club, Alex Parra. They've been fantastic. With all of this, I've asked a lot from them, and they just keep absolutely delivering. They have a great vision too for the club, and so I'm really happy to be here, and I hope I'm here in still 15 years from now. So
yeah.
I think we're doing a great job. And then shout out to anybody who's trying to do things the right way. I know it's hard, you know, the easy thing to do is to just do it the easy way. Right. I mean, but doing it the right way is hard, you know, the right thing to do and the hard thing to do are usually the same thing. So, I mean, there's, like I said, the few clubs in this town, that are doing things the right way. I'll give those shout outs, ACDMY, the central portion of our town, the Spire up on the north side of the town, and Houston Futsal Academy on the south, the east side of town, all three of them doing really, really good work. So if you're watching this and you live in those parts of the town, I know I'm probably 2.5 hours from you. Because of traffic. So those guys are doing really, really good stuff out there. Don't buy into the big logos.
Right. That's well said. And again, Coach, you know, something personal from my perspective, always like to see when I see other fellow veterans that are excelling in the game, and doing things the way you're doing them. I think that's one of the biggest, you know, one of the big other things that I'm a huge advocate of is veteran support and getting more veterans involved in the game.
Sure.
They make incredible, you know, incredible coaches, incredible administrators. So that's kind of something. So for our coaches that may be listening out there, our DOCs, you know, kind of look over your staff. How many of them are veterans? You know, that because in terms of, you know, men and women alike, and especially one of the things that we need to have more of in our game are female coaches.
Yes, absolutely.
That you're not going to find harder workers. You're not going to find more committed workers. And they need when they leave, stop wearing the uniform, they need something that is still community based, something that they're going to be a part of that's bigger than them. And I mean, they match that to a T. So again, just a shout out to you, Coach, as a veteran, you know, I'm Air Force, or I'll forgive you for the Navy piece, but that's, you know, we'll get over that.
Yeah, sure.
Just kidding. Shout out to, and for our veterans that may be listening, you know, if you're involved in the game, thank you. Continue to do great work. Please don't hesitate to reach out to us. Or if you're thinking about pursuing coaching, please don't hesitate to reach out to us as well. Love to help in any way we can. So again, Coach, this has been great. We appreciate you. He is Coach Mike Carroll, Player Development Director for SG1 Soccer Club, located out of Katy, Texas in the greater Houston area. Thank you again, Coach. And for our listeners, keep doing your thing. We appreciate all your support. We appreciate all the downloads. Continue to go subscribe. Go to our YouTube channel at the 50_50 podcast. Subscribe there. You'll get notifications on when we're going live, as well as on Twitter. So you know what to do. So until the next time, keep downloading and keep listening.